Welcome to Free Speech Bites. I'm Kirsty Hughes, Chief Executive at Index on Censorship. Free Speech Bites is our podcast series made in association with SAGE. In this series, Nigel Warburton interviews a number of leading figures about free expression and why it matters.
Stephanie Merritt is an author and journalist who's written a series of best-selling novels under the pen name S.J. Paris. I asked her to choose a free speech icon, someone whose life highlights the importance of free expression. Stephanie Merritt, welcome to Free Speech Bites.
Thank you.
Now, who is your free speech icon?
I've chosen the 16th century monk and philosopher Giordano Bruno.
What's known about him?
Well, he was born in 1548 near Naples, and he went into the Dominican order, like a lot of young men of his age who wanted to study. He remained as a monk. He was ordained. He did his doctorate in theology. And then the first we really know about him is that in his late 20s, he had come to the attention of his abbot in his monastery of San Domenico Maggiore, because he had started to take an interest in quite unorthodox views and beliefs. He'd been caught reading banned books in the toilet, was rumoured to be a supporter of various unorthodox viewpoints, including potentially challenging the divinity of Christ. And it became clear that he was obviously a young man whose intellectual curiosity was too great for the strictures of the religious order that he'd gone into. And he was told that he was going to have to face the Father Inquisitor. So rather than be subjected to questioning by the Roman Inquisition, he ran away from his monastery in the middle of the night. As a result of that, he was excommunicated, and he had to sort of go on the run through Italy. He was about, I think, 28 when that happened. And he really spent most of the rest of his adult life travelling through Europe, trying to keep one step ahead of the Inquisition, trying to find a place where he could explore his heretical ideas and philosophies and write these books and have them published.
So he's leading this life of dissent, following his beliefs about the nature of the universe and the nature of God and so on. How does it end?
Well, it ends rather sadly. A few times in his life, he finds places where he thinks that he's able to settle and able to stay, and always there's some reason why he has to be moved on. And he ends up being lured back to Italy, we think probably on false pretenses, where he is arrested by the Inquisition. He then spends 7 years in the prisons of the Inquisition in Rome, undergoing various forms of torture. He has a trial in Venice, various trials in Rome. It's clear that the Roman authorities are not quite sure what to do with him, but in the end he won't recant, he won't go back on the things that he's published and the ideas that he's put out there, and so he does end up being burned at the stake in 1600.
That's quite amazing to think that somebody should survive 7 years imprisonment by the Inquisition, presumably horrendous torture, and not change his views.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that he was in there for so long was that he was considering doing what several years later Galileo did, which was to actually decide that he was going to take it all back. In the end, he decided, it seems, that he couldn't recant.
You've mentioned Galileo. Bruno, like Galileo, rejected the idea that the Earth was the centre of the universe.
Yes, he was very interested in the Copernican theory, which obviously at the time was considered heretical by the Catholic Church. Bruno felt that Copernicus hadn't gone far enough. He felt that not only was the Earth not the centre of the known universe, but actually that our Sun was only one of a number of stars in a universe that was potentially infinite, and that all these stars potentially had their own system of planets, quite possibly with intelligent life on. Although he wasn't the first person to put forward this theory, he was probably one of the first people to articulate it and to publish books that dared to suggest this, something that obviously we take for granted now. But at the time, it was even more bold and outrageous than what Copernicus was suggesting, because the whole narrative of Christianity, that Christ came to redeem mankind, was thrown into complete confusion by such an idea. The idea that there were other races of people, there could be other types of people on other planets. Would they have their own saviours? Would they have their own systems of belief? It made a mockery of everything that the church was teaching, and it was really partly for that that Bruno was considered to be so dangerous.
In a way, he's what we would have liked Galileo to have been, somebody who stuck to his beliefs that were more or less the right beliefs, it seems.
Yes, and he's often regarded by some people as one of the first martyrs for science. And it's easy to forget that there were lots of other strands to his views, and he was very interested in what they would have called at the time natural magic. It's pushing it a bit to say that he was really a proto-scientist who died for scientific truth, but he certainly did, without really any evidence beyond some very basic calculations, he did believe that this was the likely shape of the universe and this was the cosmos that we lived in. And again, it seems that he did have more courage when it came to his convictions than Galileo, who actually did recant and was not executed.
How did you get interested in Bruno?
I discovered him when I was a student and I was working on a thesis about the effects of Renaissance occultism on the literature of the time. He must have been a very extraordinary person because he did rise very quickly wherever he went. He seems to have had this exceptional charisma. So from being a fugitive ex-monk, he went to France, where he ended up as personal tutor to the King of France. And from there he came to England and became friends with some of the most eminent figures of the day. So one of his great friends was the poet and courtier Philip Sidney. So it was through Sidney that I discovered Bruno, and I immediately became fascinated by his life, I think, as well as his theories, but particularly the life that he was forced to live. He seemed to have this aspect of being a man who was just too modern for his age, a man whose ideas were too progressive for the time that he lived in, who was always trying to find his place in the world and was living in this permanent exile and permanent itinerant existence and seemed to be just looking for somewhere where he would be free to write the books that he wanted to write. And for a time he found that in England. From the first time that I started looking into his life, from the first reference that I found to him, I thought he would make a fantastic subject for a novel.
But you haven't just written one novel about him, you've now written three, I believe.
Yes, I forgot. Well, I wanted to write about him, and then when I started writing fiction, I forgot about him for a long time, and I was writing contemporary novels. It was a few years ago, I went back to Bruno, back to investigating and his life and thinking that I would like to return to him, and I didn't know how to do it because there was just so much. There was a lot of his life that could have been interesting and good background to set a novel, and I wasn't sure how I was going to fit it all in. And then I came across the theory, which is, I think it's not conclusively proved at all, but one or two academics have come up with the theory that while Bruno was living in England, that he was working as a spy for Sir Francis Walsingham, who was Elizabeth I's master of intelligence. And it's even possible that Bruno was instrumental in thwarting a plot against the life of Queen Elizabeth in 1583. And so once I read about that, I thought, yeah, that's the basis for writing stories about him, to set his life in the context of his potentially working as a spy, given that he's in a Protestant country where really his best works and the books that have survived and that most fully express his theories and his philosophy were the books that he wrote and published in England. So that became the basis of this series.
Which you've written under the pen name of S.J. Paris.
Yes, that was partly because I've written other books and I've worked as a journalist, and so the S.J. Paris name was to set this series apart and almost brand it as, you know, this is going to be a series of books about Giordano Bruno and hopefully following him through to the conclusion of his life with a number of adventures on the way.
As an inspirational figure in the area of free expression, though, what is it that you take away from this remarkable man?
It's Bruno's boldness and the courage that he had in publishing the books that he published that I find most striking about him. And the fact that at any point, I mean, really from the moment before he ran away from his monastery to right up until the time when he was in the prison of the Inquisition, he could at any point have decided to save himself, to live an easy life. But he had these ideas and he felt obviously a compulsion to express them and to write them down and to disseminate them, I guess. And so for him, the constant threat to his life, and when he started writing and when he started coming up with his philosophies, he was living in Italy, where he knew from the beginning that it would be impossible for him ever to express these ideas without putting his own life in danger. So the fact that he chose to go on the run, to live a life in exile and to put himself at constant risk. Every time he published a book, it alienated somebody and it compounded the sentence on him. And yet the fact that he was willing to do that and he had the courage to do that. For me as a writer, I find that very inspiring because it's so easy to take for granted the ability to publish within reason whatever we want to publish. And particularly as an atheist and as someone who's written for humanist magazines and atheist publications, the idea that you might not be able to say that to challenge religious orthodoxy would put your life in danger, right? It's good to be reminded of how much liberty we really have to challenge ideas and to be reminded of somebody who took enormous risks in order to do that. He is recorded in the account of his trial. When they pronounced the sentence of death by burning on him, he is supposed to have said, "I think it gives you greater fear to pronounce this sentence on me than it gives me to hear it." He was so convinced that his ideas would endure, convinced enough to go to the stake for them. And he must have believed that they would have an impact and that he was right. I mean, I think that's the most telling thing in the end, that he willingly went to his death for ideas that were not, you know, it wasn't a martyrdom as such. He wasn't going believing in a better world or that he was dying for a cause. But he knew that he was dying because he believed in his ideas. I think that is very inspiring.
Did he have anything to say about free expression itself?
I'm not sure that he was as explicit as that, but he did write along these lines. He wrote, "He who desires to philosophize must first of all doubt all things. He must not assume a position in a debate before he has listened to the various opinions and considered and compared the reasons for and against." To take that view in an age where really only one viewpoint was tolerated, the idea that one must consider other people's opinions, one must consider different possibilities and different arguments. I mean, that's certainly what he does embody, that all his writings really are about the possibility of allowing other ideas and pursuing these possibilities to various conclusions. And so I think from that point of view, that is a very pro-free speech argument. So he was certainly very interested in the exchange of ideas, which was a feature of the Renaissance, but then only up to a point. And then once the ideas became too dangerous, that exchange was shut down. That's where Bruno wasn't able to accept the limits. For the Catholic Church, Bruno was extremely dangerous, and that the ideas that he was promoting were threatening to do no less than overturn the whole order of the cosmos. That's what his theories were proposing. And I suppose for that, if you can overturn the order of the cosmos, then it becomes very difficult for the church to maintain its hierarchy, because that's all predicated on a very strict order of being. And so I'm sure it was for that reason that the church was so determined to exterminate him and his writings.
Stephanie Merritt, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For more information about Index on Censorship, go to www.indexoncensorship.org.